Hey everyone, this is Chaplain Denny. Welcome to another episode of Chap Chat. And Chap Chat is a series of podcasts where I get the pleasure and the opportunity to talk to some of the finest individuals that I know, people that are part of the South Carolina National Guard, people that serve selflessly, and a lot of times that have stories of resilience, or they share keys to what helps keeps them grounded during times of stress and struggle. And today I have the pleasure of having my friend, Sergeant Travis Duncan, here with us. And Travis, I know you've been on some podcasts before.
I have.
Never on Chap Chat.
Never on Chap Chat.
Yeah. So welcome. And so can you take a minute? I know that you've shared on previous podcasts some of the programs that you're involved with.
Sure. I am the State Resiliency Coordinator with the Service Member Family Care Directorate here of the South Carolina Army National Guard. So what Service Member Family Care is, they're all the support programs for service members and their family, right? So suicide prevention, behavioral health, family programming, right? So education falls in that realm. So does IPPW, the DEERS office, employment services. Mm-hmm. So all of those support programs that are more of a benefit to service members, that's kind of where they all reside.
Okay. Okay. And when you are not working here full time, what unit are you with?
The 133rd Military Police Company.
Okay. And how long have you been with the MPs?
I have been with the MPs since 2009.
Okay.
Right. So I started out with the 131 out in Beaufort, mm-hmm. which is no longer around. And then I was with the 132nd, and then finally ended up with the 133rd.
Okay. So you hit them all.
Hit them all. Well, everything except for HHD.
Right.
So
right.
I'll make it there eventually, I guess.
Right. Right. What do you enjoy about being an MP?
You know, being an MP saved my life.
Yep. Tell me about that.
100%.
How so?
So I was originally assigned to a CAV troop, Troop B202 Cavalry. It was the last cavalry troop here in South Carolina. It's long lineage within the South Carolina National Guard. That unit went away or was phased out after we got back from Afghanistan. I was struggling when I came back from Afghanistan with like PTSD and all sorts of things. And the first sergeant of the MP company that was being put in place to replace us was a first sergeant by the name of Johnny Ard. And they were basically giving us the option of staying with the CAV troop and ending up in like Fort Mill or with like one of the light infantry guys, companies, or becoming an MP. And because I was struggling so bad, First Sergeant Art pulled me off to the side. He was like, listen, there's a lot of opportunity here. You're a very bright soldier, but you got a lot of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you need some extra discipline in your life. he was like, and where best to get that than becoming an MP? So I took him up on that, which it felt like an issuance of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, being an MP is one of those things where you're of the troops for the troops, but you're held at a higher standard, right? To enforce the policies and regulations of the Army as a whole, you have to be above it all to do it, right? So above on the level,
right,
or above it. So giving me that challenge kind of helped straighten me out. It gave me a purpose, which then motivated me to be better and to do the things that I've accomplished in my career, which huge. If Johnny Ard ever hears this, man, like, thank you
right.
for the opportunity. Thank you for that challenge.
Isn't it great to have someone that can be honest in your life?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and he may have phrased it in a way that got you thinking, but and there was a little kernel of truth that sometimes we need to hear.
Very, very much so. It's not necessarily the message, but sometimes it's the delivery, right? Where I was in my life, I needed somebody to be like, listen, you are a mess.
Right, right.
But I got this thing for you that is going to straighten you out.
Yeah.
at that point in time in my life, I needed that. And 100%, the MP Corps has been that for me, right?
Right.
So they haven't disappointed me yet.
And the MPs, for those that are listening that may not know, MPs are military police. So how did that straighten you out? Because problems follow you regardless.
Yeah, wherever you go.
Regardless of wherever you go, there you are.
It was not an easy or seamless transition by any means, right? So going to MP school, it was a different level of discipline that was needed. In the beginning, I struggled with it, right? But I had leaders at every level that were constantly giving me new challenges to accomplish. And the thing is, like, on a personal note, I hate to lose. Like, I don't know anybody that really does. I know it's kind of like a thing, but I really hate to lose, especially when I feel in my heart that I could win.
Mm-hmm.
So it really just kind of like pushed me.
Gotcha.
So being an MP, it was just the constant thing of, they provided me a purpose. Every leader that I've had, even my bad ones, because in mm-hmm. 20 years of service, you got some good ones and bad ones.
That's right.
They provided me a focal point, right? So, and it was one of those things of like, something as simple as saying like, we have this mission, here is the bigger picture, right? This is where your part of the bigger picture is. Just providing me that
mm-hmm.
gave me enough purpose to be like, this is my sole job and I want to do this job well because I want my part of the picture to be great.
Right.
So, you know, just giving me that really just gave me the purpose I needed and motivated me to do what I needed to do to get to that next level.
So the purpose, why was that so important to you?
Well, so I've also spent time as an instructor, like down at BLC, right? And one of the things about leadership is you are supposed to provide purpose, direction, and motivation, right? Those mm-hmm. three things. When you provide soldiers a purpose, it gives them their why. Big mm-hmm. shout out to Captain Craven of the 133rd. He always speaks about knowing your why.
Yeah.
Right. So when you have a purpose, there is nothing that is going to slow you down in trying to accomplish it, right? To get to that piece. You have a function. When soldiers know that they have a function in an organization, they tend to do so much better.
Right.
Right. Versus you spend 9-10 weeks becoming a soldier. You go to a place and then you learn all these cool techniques and things that are now your job. And then you go and they just put you in a closet, right? Those people kind of like dwindle off.
Yeah, we owe them better.
Right. So when leaders provide purpose to soldiers, they execute so much better because they're like, this is mine. They take a piece of ownership with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it motivates tenfold,
mm.
right? Also, knowing your purpose gives you a direction in which you're moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, I know that as an MP, I'm going to do TCPs, man ECPs, conduct law enforcement patrols, right? Generally keep everybody safe. I'm a public safety officer,
mm-hmm.
right? It fires people up.
Yeah.
Right. I have a real thing to do. I'm going to step out here and do it. And I want to look good doing it. So, you know, that is such, oh man, it's such a thing of that people take for granted.
Yeah. Right.
Cause there's a lot of people that train their entire lifetime in an organization and they never really get a chance to do their job. As an MP, you get to do your job more times than not. Right. So, and you train and you train and you train to where it becomes like second nature.
And we call on the MPs quite a bit.
Yep.
Not just for deployments and mobilizations, but for our DISCA, our home missions.
Yep, stateside missions.
Yep. So during Hurricane Helene or whatever disaster or flood may be coming to South Carolina, MPs are out there.
Yep, we're there.
And when you said TCP, that's traffic control points.
That's right.
And so redirecting traffic, helping law enforcement with certain tasks. And y'all play a vital role in all that. So it's not just deploying to someplace else, whether it's Gitmo or somewhere. It's also you have a real stateside mission.
That's right.
And y'all step up every single time.
Every time.
And do it. And do it. And I love what we were talking about with your purpose and your why, because so many soldiers don't understand that. And then we wonder sometimes why our retention rates aren't where they need to be.
It's a flaw.
Mm-hmm.
Because our picture is so big, right? I hate to use the cliche of like people just falling through the cracks, but that is really the case, right? So when you have an organization like ours that is big and it's very active compared to some others, you tend to focus on the more highlighted portions versus more of the support things.
Right.
And soldiers get wrapped up in that and they kind of get lost. There's also the thing of like people not knowing that opportunities are like what opportunities are available. Right. So they think that just because they swore into the National Guard and they do things, you know, 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks in the summer or 2 weeks a year, and then, you know, probable deployments, it kind of puts them in this lull of like, well, it may not actually happen for me.
Right.
Right. When really you should always, like you, as an organization, we should push for the eventuality of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like one day you will do this job. Will it be today? No. Will it be tomorrow? Probably not. But you need to be ready for the job when the job presents itself.
Right. And one of the struggles I have is when I talk to soldiers and they're like, I'm just this or I'm just that. And I stop them and I'm like, no, you're not just anything. You serve a purpose within this organization. There you are filling a slot that in the big picture of things, they created the slot for you to do this. There's no just. So I remember when I was at a grocery store at Fort Cavazos, and I was talking to one of the employees there, and I said, what do you do here? He said, I'm just the guy who puts meat out. And when I hear that I'm just, he's making himself less than. And I said, no, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be able to get this, the food that I'm going to be making for dinner tonight. I said, to me, that's a pretty valuable role.
100%.
If you weren't here, I wouldn't be able to get that. It's a small example, but no one is just anything.
Right.
And you can also move that outside the military context.
100%.
I'm just a truck driver. I'm just a street sweeper. No, man. Y'all got a purpose. Yeah. There is a purpose to everything under the sun.
Definitely serves a greater purpose.
Yeah.
And, you know, you speak to that, right? So one of the biggest things, like, when people say, for instance, like, you see these news articles about, like, just bystanders standing by when something like an emergency happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they become heroes.
Right.
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 That person didn't think that morning that they were going to become a hero. Right. They were, I was just a bystander. No, you were a hero.
Yeah. You stepped
up. You
were
in the right place at the right time. You saw that something needed to be done and you stepped up and you did it. Right. So 100% where I'm on board with what you're saying. Right. People generally just glaze over like, oh, well, you know, I was just there. Oh, 100%. You needed to be there.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. So,
yeah,
I'm with you on that.
You talked about your, when you came back from Afghanistan, you're struggling with some PTSD and probably some, I don't know, I'm reading between the lines, and some other mental health stuff, I would think.
Yep.
Is that where you get your passion to do what you do for the Guard?
Yes. I mean, that plays a part into it. Like, I grew up in a household where it was always a thing of service. My dad served 24 years in the Army, right? He retired up at Fort Bragg. He spent 15 of that 24 years at Fort Bragg. So there's always been a sense of service, like, embedded in who I am. But just because you've been exposed to that for the predominant part of your life does not necessarily mean that's the road you're going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
When I was struggling coming back home, there were people in and outside of this organization that had enough empathy for me to show up, and I never want to feel like I owe somebody anything, right? And because they were there for me, I feel a sense of eternal obligation to be there for somebody else, right? It is the constant thought process of paying it forward, because somebody that didn't necessarily have to do that for me did it for me. And for no type of repayment either. Like,
right.
Out of the kindness of their heart, they did that.
It was the right thing to do.
100%. Yeah. So that's what motivated me to want to change, one, and to be that person for somebody else that is going through something similar, you know, always being available and able to help. Even if I don't have all the answers, I can at least get you pointed in the right direction,
mm-hmm.
to get the answers that you need. You know what I mean? So that's 100% why I do it.
Wow. If it's okay, I want to talk about some of the struggles that you had when you came back from deployment.
Sure.
And if you don't want to talk about it, you don't want to go there, it's cool. That's fine.
I'm all right with it.
Okay. What were those struggles?
So I come from a very religious family.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Afghanistan was one of those dreams that, like, I've always had, like, yes, I'm finally gonna. I went to, like, just some backstory. I came into the Army in 2004, right? There was conflicts in Iraq going on. There was conflicts in Afghanistan. I shipped to basic with guys that, as soon as we were done with basic and AIT, those guys were shipping out to units that were deploying.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the thing of, like, the super macho thing of, like, oh man, I want to deploy. I want to get out there. I want to get into it. Looking back at it, at the age that I am now, it was so naive, because I grew up with all of these super macho like figures to look at.
Yeah.
Rambo, Arnold Schwarzenegger with all these action flicks, you know,
Wesley Snipes. Chaplain Denny.
Chaplain Denny.
Yeah, thank you.
You know?
Yeah, right. Thank you for going along with that.
you had all these super macho people that you kind of idolized,
mm-hmm.
not knowing what was on the other side of that, the struggles that those people in real life, in those real life situations, had to endure. So me and my dad really didn't talk a lot growing up, right? And I never could understand why, right? Not saying, like, we didn't talk, like, we talked, but it wasn't like how I spoke to him after I joined the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And our conversations became deeper after my first deployment. My dad was a combat medic who did several tours in Iraq, tour to Panama, tour in Afghanistan once, like, combat medic.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things me and him didn't talk about.
Right.
But we understood. Like, I understood him more after my deployment.
Yeah, when you chew some of the same dirt.
Yeah, it's way.
Brings an understanding.
Way different. When I came back, there are things that I saw in Afghanistan that if I would have known 6 months ahead of time, I would have been like, nah, that's not real. Right. And it was hard to process. It's even harder to process when you're in the middle of it. And one of the things that I struggled with was, when you're in that environment, how comfortable you are with how intense those moments can be.
Mm.
Right. Mm. So something as simple as, like, an air raid, right? Mortars coming in. You hear the sirens go off, you report to the bunkers.
Yep.
Right? So when I deployed with a CAV troop that was redesignated Delta 1st and the 118th. Right? So we were assigned to infantry guys. We did convoy ops. We did route clearance. We did QRF response.
Mm-hmm.
So when the bombs went off, instead of going to a bunker, we'd hop on the trucks.
Right.
And we'd roll out.
Yeah, looking for the poo.
That's it. We're looking for the guys.
Yeah.
Right? We did long-range reconnaissance, like, overnight. Like, these are the things that, like, as a kid playing soldier, I dreamed about. Like, oh man, this is it.
Yeah.
And I was sadly mistaken. My first go out, and it was just boring. Right? It was like, oh man, nothing really happened. Okay. But then when things started happening, it never stopped.
Yeah.
It just kept rolling. It was hit after hit after hit, right? Our unit had, thank God we didn't suffer, and I'd say that, like, it kind of sucks to say it, but, like, we didn't lose anybody, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But we had guys that got injured, like, bad.
Yeah.
Right? To which, when you get back to your B hut after the day, and you're sitting there, and you're like, man, that could have been me.
Yeah.
Right? Who's going to tell my mom?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to tell my dad? Right? Like, and then you have to go to sleep and then get up and do it right. again the next day.
Right.
So those kind of things play with the mind. And coming from a heavily religious background, like getting in ticks where you have to fire back,
mm-hmm.
it is a thing of, the thing that used to conflict me the most was I never wanted to really hurt anybody. Right. But these people were out trying to hurt me and my teammates. I had to respond. But then at the end of the day, now I have to think about it. I'm left with my conscience. Right. There was a chaplain while I was in Afghanistan. I want to think his name was Dargan. He's since retired, but he would always see me hanging out in front of the mess hall, and they had a swing right in front of the chapel. So sometimes we'd wait for chow. We just sit on the swings and just kind of, you know, kick it. Quite literally just swinging. And he would, one day we were coming back off a mission. And, as we were coming back, one of the guys from my unit got involved in a firefight right in front of our camp, which was in response to a VBID going off right at the gate. You had, you know, the local ANA came in, the Afghan CIA showed up, and then there was a firefight and one of our guys got hit, and pretty bad too, to where, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen next. Sitting on that swing in front of the chapel, literally just, it's really hard to cry in front of a chapel. Like, it was far enough to where people weren't like on you.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just sit there and kind of like weep it out.
Yeah.
And he walked up to me and he was just like, hey man, why don't you come in the chapel?
Right.
And we sat down and we talked, and I told him what really conflicted me with that. And it wasn't the fact that I had to do it. It was a thing that I was okay with doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I trained so hard for this, and I have no guilt in defending myself in this. And in some way, shape, form, or fashion, it bothers me when I'm trying to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he had to explain to me that in there is a, in translation, there's something that's lost.
Yep.
Right. So
mm-hmm.
thou shalt not kill does not necessarily mean that you can't, in response, defend yourself. It's thou shalt not commit murder.
Murder.
Right. So you didn't set out this morning to go out and get into this conflict with this other human being. Right. You were just out doing your job, and they decided that they wanted to have a conflict with you, and you did what was necessary to protect yourself and your team, and you're back and you're fine. He was like, you could take solace in that. He was like, which is great to hear.
Sure.
Right?
It
eases.
It absolves you.
For the moment. Yeah. And then you're like, man, I got to get up and do this again tomorrow.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Those kind of things. Those kind of people are essential to the welfare of soldiers.
Yeah.
Right? Soldiering is hard. Most people don't understand that, because, I mean, right now we're in peacetime.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there are hard things you still have to do. But soldiering's hard. Right? You got to have mental fortitude to do this job.
Sure.
Right. And living in a country where we're all volunteer army.
Yeah.
You know, that's kudos to you, man. You volunteered, you stepped up to do the things. Great.
I think you have an interesting perspective on this. When I talk to new soldiers coming in, I ask them, why did you join? Most of them are saying, well, I joined for the education benefit.
Which is great.
But I picture some Joe sitting in English class at Clemson or USC or Midlands Tech. And then all of a sudden they get their NOS and stuff just gets real. Right. I joined so I could get all these benefits. But now, I got to step up.
I got to do my job.
What advice would you give to someone like that?
That's a really tough one. It's simple, but it's hard both at the same time. For those that are encountering that oh snap moment for the very first time, it's okay. It's a natural reaction, right? Because given the climate and what's been going on the last 10 years, like, you know, nobody really expected it to happen, right? Or for it to happen. Or you like, but the deal is like, you have trained to do the job. It's a confidence thing at this point, man.
Mm-hmm.
You 100% can do it. You can 100% have a good time doing it. You can learn a lot. But you got to go in as optimistic as you did the day you raised your hand to swear that oath.
Yeah.
Right. And understand that you're a part of something larger than you can even fathom. Right. The influence of our organization is not just statewide. It's global.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There are people in other countries that know what the 218th patch looks like.
Sure.
They recognize it. They're like, you guys are from South Carolina. Right. So know that the organization in which you serve has a long history of service, right? Serving a greater purpose for the greater good.
Yeah.
And just take that and, you know, roll with it and try to always put your best foot forward in doing that and serve with honor.
Right? Sure. Yeah.
So living those Army Corps values.
Mm-hmm.
Something you learned from the very beginning. So
that's good. That's good. And then when you came back after your mobilization, what haunted you?
We had a few people that committed suicide when we got home.
Mm-hmm.
There was, again, like some people that got injured over there and they had larger things going on in their lives. Like they had wives, they had kids, right? I'm just some 20 something year old kid that by the skin of his teeth made it through unscathed. That was definitely in some situations that I probably shouldn't have walked away from unscathed. But you know, thank God I, you know, made it through the way I did. There was a level of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Lost a few friends after deployments that weren't as intense, right? So I went to Kosovo. I went to Gitmo. We had some people that after those deployments, they weren't as high profile as the Afghanistan mission, but came back and completed suicide.
Mm.
And that's one thing that haunted me the most was like, I literally was talking to one person a few days prior. And then to hear the news that they took their own life, like that was, I was just talking to him.
Right.
Why couldn't I see the signs? So I dove into, you know, the ACE program and mm-hmm. the assist program and trying to learn as much as I could about what it looked like. That way I could help. Right. Going to those services for those individuals was tough.
Oh yeah.
Very tough. Not only because I felt sorry that I wasn't able to help that individual in their time of need, but just the pain and anguish that was left behind from it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's very tough to digest when you're like, man, I was just talking to that guy and now like his mom, his dad, that they won't ever be able to, you know, do the great things with them, yeah. Hug them, love them. All they have left is a memory. And that's rough.
It is.
And I never want anybody to have to experience that to that level anymore. right? That's why I've gotten into this job. That's why I take things as serious as I do with my job and my service,
mm-hmm.
because it's important. That's why I want to train people to be resilient leaders. That way they can identify the warning signs and get people the help they need. Cause that's what, I mean, people need help.
Yeah.
And because we are in an organization that's so heavily vested in tradition, in that you become prideful and you're like, no, I'm too strong for, nobody will ever understand, you know, what I got going on. It was like, nah, man, like there have been plenty before you mm-hmm. that have gone through things just as intense, just as hard, that are here that want to help. So to those that may be listening that are struggling, it's okay to get help.
Yeah.
You don't have to publicize it. You don't have to. There are trusted people in your life that if you just simply talk, they will listen.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have confidence in those people, there are people that it's their jobs to listen, right? So we have hotlines, you know, the crisis line here, 988, all these different resources where people are here to listen. And you're like, oh, well, they don't really care about me. They don't know me. I don't have to know you to care about you.
That's right.
Right? I don't have to know you to care about you. The one thing that works in your favor is that I don't know you. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to judge you.
Yeah, there's some anonymity.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to judge you. I'm here to help, 100% help.
Yeah.
So take some solace in that. Like, there are people that don't know you that will bend over backwards and make sure you get what you need.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So how did you get what you needed? What help did you get?
Originally, I tried to go the therapy route. Mm-hmm. That did not work well.
Okay.
Right? Getting back, working with the VA, there are a lot of things that were better. So the first thing they did was like this telehealth thing, right? They sat me in front of a computer monitor with a therapist that was like out of like Iowa or somewhere like that. This old guy, nothing against him, man. He was the nice guy, man. But I was so angry that I couldn't sit down with a real person. I was so mad. And the thing was, like, looking at it in hindsight, the reason why I was sitting in front of that guy was to be evaluated, to put me in front of a real person.
Yeah.
Right. And I was just so upset at that. Like, I went over, I served, and I couldn't even get a real person to sit down with me. I mean, that thing lit me up. It's 400 degrees hot.
I bet.
And I'll never forget it. My mom was like, I was struggling really, really bad. My mom was like, listen, you gotta go.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna take you. And I was like, you don't have to take me. She drove me. She sat down, and I remember coming back to the car after that appointment, and she was like, so how did it go? And I was like, I was fine. And she was like, I see it on your face. Like, tell me the real.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right. So I explained it to her. She was like, okay. If that didn't work out, we're going somewhere else.
Yeah.
So we drove. At that time, my mom lives down in Beaufort. So we went from Beaufort to Savannah. And there's a vet center there. Took me out there to the vet center, and they hooked me up. The guy that worked the reception desk, he was a Iraqi freedom veteran that lost both his legs to an ID blast. Probably the funniest person I've ever met in my entire life from top to bottom. He will make you laugh even when you don't want to laugh.
Right.
And he's like, I know you laughing because, you know, you have to show me some kind of pity, but these jokes are hitting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he was real. He was funny and he knew how to approach the game. He was like, look, we have group therapy every day, Monday through Friday. We do two sessions a day. You pick a session and I better see you. And for like the first month and a half, like that's what it was. I would drive down to Savannah on one of my days off from work
mm-hmm.
and I would sit in a group. And for like the first 3 weeks, I didn't say a single word. And the reason why is because as an enduring freedom guy, right, serving in Afghanistan, sitting in a room full of Vietnam veterans,
mm-hmm.
veterans from Desert Storm, Desert Shield, and OIF, the initial kickoff, listening to their stories, you're like, I am not going to say a word.
Right.
Because my mission was a cakewalk compared to what those guys went through.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not, like, for those that don't know, if you ever get into a conversation with a Vietnam vet that has been, like, combat vet, listen, they have always had it worse. Right. And they let you know that. They give you the real. They're like, not only did I have to deal with that stuff there, I came back and people like dumped on me.
That's
like,
right.
So you're like, man, that does suck.
Right.
Because I remember coming back through Bangalore, Maine.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're just changing terminals and these people are cheering you on.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. And I mean, it is a slew of people.
Yeah. And they're just there hugging you.
Yeah. Like, in my mind, I'm like, how can I compare my pain to his pain? But those guys in those therapy sessions, even though it's like my pain's worse than your pain, they are very supportive in helping you get through the things. So,
yeah, and you bring up an interesting point with that. And I think that sometimes people get in their own mind, they start comparing, well, I'm hurting, I'm suffering, but my trauma isn't nearly as bad as someone else's trauma. So what am I even trying to get help for? And when you get in that comparing mode, it prevents you from getting the help that you need.
100%.
So the takeaway I'm getting is don't compare traumas. Don't compare pain. I mean, pain is pain. Trauma is trauma. And yet, someone may have had it worse than you, but that still doesn't negate the pain or trauma that you're going through.
Nah, man. Trauma is as unique as a fingerprint. It's different for everybody.
That's a great way of putting it.
It's not a one size fit all.
Yeah.
Everybody's experiences vary, right? You may be put in the same. There are guys that went on the deployment with us that came back and were perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It affects different people in different ways. So, I mean, the end result is both still need help.
That's right.
Right?
But if you're in the trauma comparing business, you're never going to get the help that you need.
No, you'll never win.
Yeah.
You'll never get things resolved.
Yeah, and that's an important point you brought up, and thank you for sharing that, because I think that too many people are suffering in silence because of that.
Right.
And what I love about you is you seek out those people that you know are suffering in silence.
100%.
You're not afraid to come up to them and be like, yo, Bo, what's up?
Yep. What's good, my guy?
Yeah, let's keep it real. Yep. Let's have a conversation. And I admire that about you, because you're very approachable, but your sincerity and authenticity lead the way, and you make it easy.
You got to be genuine in it.
Yeah.
Right. People feel like, you know, a lot of times people like set out to deceive them. Oh, they don't really care. People feel when you're being non-genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, because I want the best for myself and others, like, that's, I'm leading with my heart all the time.
You do.
Fully invested.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to take the time to tell me about it, 100% I'm going to listen, right? And there are times I've put myself in positions where people are like, I don't need you to fix it for me, I just need you to listen. And I'm like, 100%, load me up.
That's right.
And as somebody that is being a support person, you got to be okay with that. You got to be okay with just sitting with them and listening and letting them just air it out. Because sometimes that's what they need to help fix themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Just to talk themselves through the process, and just need somebody else to be like, uh-huh, no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I did hear this. What I'm hearing you say is this. Do you mean this?
Right.
Right? So taking time to do that stuff genuinely, it goes a long way.
Absolutely, it does. It does. So how does Travis take care of himself?
I spend a lot of time with friends and family. I thrive in social environments. I need to be around people,
mm-hmm.
right? My wife is an introvert, so it kills her. It kills her. Oh, my gosh. I'm like, hey, we need to do a barbecue this weekend. She's like, I just want to kick it at the house. I'm like, it's okay. I'll take the kids. We'll go.
Yeah.
And my kids are extroverts to the max. And I love it. I love it. Being around people, doing doing things. Like, it was instilled in me early on to volunteer and to be a part of, you know, the volunteer movement. So I'm instilling that in my kids early, right? We go out to the suicide prevention walks. We go and pick up trash. Like, we volunteer for different things. And I'm teaching them that early,
mm-hmm.
because I want them to look back and be like, you know what? We always tried to put ourselves in a position to help people,
mm-hmm.
with no reward, like nothing out of it. Now, my daughter may tell you she does it for the treats, right? Like the little Debbie cakes and all that stuff. Because, you know, that's what we give her. But, you know, the greatest gift is to see the satisfaction of somebody else getting help.
Yeah.
And being like, you know what, man? When the chips were down, you were really there for me, 100%.
Yeah. What a great lesson to pass on to your kids.
Oh, yeah, 100%, man. I'm trying to raise good people.
You're doing it. You're doing it. You're sharing the story when you were deployed and you had the chaplain there with you. And you said you came from a religious background.
Yep.
How did your faith help you through some of those difficult times, even when it may have, your faith may have been in conflict?
So my uncle was a pastor of a church down in Laurel, Florida. And we would always have to go to vacation Bible school. I'm not gonna front. As a kid, I hated vacation Bible school. Absolutely hated it. Right? Because at vacation Bible school, you do like Bible drills. You would, you know, learn all these different verses that were supposed to, at that time, I didn't realize it. Those were my blankets, right? I'm constantly reminded of train up a child in the way that they should go, and they won't soon depart from it. In those moments when I felt that I was struggling the most, I buried myself in my Bible, lived in it. I would go through and read Bible verses that brought me comfort. I would look at the struggle of David, the wisdom of Solomon, and look at how God would put them in positions to test them and their resolve, and then guide them to the appropriate answer. In that, if you look at those figures, they always did the same thing. They would meditate, focus on what the task was in the moment, and look for counsel. Always look for counsel. And living by that model, I would do the same thing. I would look to somebody else that was older, that was maybe not necessarily older, wiser,
mm-hmm.
that had been in experiences that I hadn't been in. And I would ask them, like, how did you get through? Most of the people that I would speak to had a religious background, right? So they were believers. There were some that weren't.
Mm-hmm.
I had a buddy of mine that is he's Muslim. And he would always talk about his experience and his conflict of being deployed in a region of the world that is predominantly Muslim.
Sure.
And how he felt conflicted in his service sometimes. But then he would always go back to, I read my Quran, and I understand that the regime that is doing the harm, they're not really living by the word.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I digest that, which was great.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
So when those very difficult times were going on for me in my life, I would go back to reading my Bible, and it was always just something of like, it would just pop up for me. Like, you know, you need to go.
Yeah.
I need to go read a little bit. Or I would find I'd be put in a position where I had downtime, and the only thing I had on me was the little pocket Bible I had.
Mm-hmm.
So those kind of things.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, but he's always there when you need him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm always amazed by the Bible. It was written millennia ago, and yet it's still living and breathing.
100%.
Meet you where you're at almost every single time.
It's hilarious sometimes how it is still relevant, right?
Yeah.
You look at just human nature, and you're like, man, I still see it.
Right.
I see it all. So it's hilarious.
Yeah. I find so much of myself and David, right, his rebellion, and the way that he would test God or stray from God, but yet
find his way back every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. Job was 100% one of my favorite.
That poor dude, right?
I mean, just ripped through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just everything that could go wrong did go wrong for him. Literally left with nothing. And all he had left was his health. And even that started to fail. But he never gave up.
Right.
Like the epitome of resilience in the sense of like, I know that my faith is stronger than anything and I'm not going to give up on it. And with that, he got everything tenfold.
Right.
Like so much more. Right. So when the chips are down and things are so seem like they just can't get any worse, hanging on to your principles and knowing that you serve a greater purpose and acknowledging that and stepping in the right direction, looking for good counsel, it'll get you on the right track.
Absolutely.
Every time.
And you don't need to be a Christian to do that.
Nope.
What we're talking from our faith tradition and our worldview and our lens, but if you take into account what Sergeant Duncan's saying, regardless of faith tradition or no tradition at all, seek wisdom, seek counsel, take time to meditate, think about things, invariably, you're going to be on the right track.
100%.
Buddy, I appreciate you. We're going to wrap this up, but you've spit some wisdom at us.
You know, it's been a really good time. And really good time.
I appreciate you sharing your deployment story with us and also your struggles.
Yeah.
And also how you've been able to grow through those struggles.
I really can't attest to any of my success without people. Like, there have been people in every facet of my life that have been there to support me and help me. So I wouldn't be where I am today without those people.
Yeah.
And they're just ordinary people.
You're a gem for us in this organization. And when you say that you would drop anything, just be able to sit with someone.
100%.
I know full well. I've seen it. I've seen you do it. And I appreciate you having that heart. And we need people like you within this organization.
They're here, man. We just need them to step up.
Yeah.
We need to highlight them.
And you found your purpose and why in the MPs, but you're fulfilling that purpose and why in a more global sense.
100%. I try to.
Yeah.
Just try to follow the people that are leading the way.
Yeah. Well, you're leading the way. You're leading the way. And we need leaders like you.
I appreciate that.
So thank you, my friend.
No, thank you for having me.
I love you. I love how you help this organization. And God bless you, buddy.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. That concludes this episode of Chap Chat. So if you have a story where you've been through some difficult stuff and you found resilience along the way or you found help along the way, please hit me up. I would love, love, love to hear your story. Everyone's got a story. And Travis shared his today, and I would love to hear yours. So this is Chaplain Denny signing off for Chap Chat. Until next time, God bless.